The National Medal for Museum and Library Service is the nation's highest honor given to museums or libraries for service to the community. This year, there were two winners in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. When Cedar Rapids flooded in 2008, the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library was also underwater. The museum rebuilt with a renewed purpose and a stronger bond to the community. Marshalltown has seen an influx of Hispanic immigrants in recent years, and the Marshalltown Public Library has responded with innovative programs to serve this new population. I'll talk with representatives of both organizations today. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Every year, the Institute of Museum and Library Services awards 10 national medals for museum and library service. This year, two of the winners are from Iowa. Later in the hour, I'll talk with Sarah Rosenblum, director of the Marshalltown Public Library, and Veronica Guevara, a University of Iowa student who grew up in Marshalltown and feels that the library shaped her in some important ways. But first, when Cedar Rapids flooded in 2008, the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library also flooded. This devastating experience turned into a challenge for the museum, and it changed their mission also in some important ways. With me today is the director of the National Czech and Slovak Museum, Gail Naughton. Hello, Gail.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being with me today. And let's go back to the floods of 2008, which of course was a terrible time in Cedar Rapids. What kind of damage did the museum suffer?
The main museum building had 8 feet of water inside of it. So if you think about, you know, it topped the doorways. And so everything under that water was damaged and basically destroyed. So we lost our permanent exhibition. The temporary exhibition was destroyed, offices, everything. And then we owned three other buildings at the same time that were also flooded.
And in the wake of that flood, when people started meeting and talking about the neighborhood and talking about the community, What did you feel the museum's role was in that?
Well, the board of directors met within days of before we were even back inside to talk about our recovery, but it was very clear very early on that the neighborhood was key in the recovery. It's the reason that this museum exists in Cedar Rapids, and we needed that neighborhood, and the neighborhood needs us. So we were decisive in that very, very quickly.
For people who don't know their Cedar Rapids history, tell us about the neighborhood, Czech Village and New Bohemia in Cedar Rapids.
Well, the Bohemians came to Cedar Rapids starting in the 1850s, and they followed the industrial jobs. And so they lived downtown where the mills and, you know, factories were. And then they moved a little farther east into what we now call New Bohemia. It was the kind of the Czech commercial area at that time. And then they came across the river. And the area, the commercial district that exists today is called Czech Village. And so Czech Village, New Bohemia is a ethnically diverse but related to this important history of Cedar Rapids.
And why is the National Czech and Slovak Museum in Cedar Rapids?
Well, you know, I like to say it's there because they did it. There was, it could have been a lot of places, but the people who founded the museum back in the 70s were very dedicated to preserving the heritage. It was successful. People came. And in the 90s, they needed to build a larger building, and they stepped up and said, we should be the National Museum. And they did it. They built it, and people did come. And they've lived it as well, because the directors and the people who helped raise the money looked nationwide to raise money. They continued to build relationships nationwide. Today we have about 2,000 members. More than half of those are not in Iowa.
When you were planning to rebuild and renovate the museum, I understand that this neighborhood is important, but there were a lot of people who didn't necessarily think that new building, new investment in this neighborhood was a very good idea, considering how badly it flooded. Did you consider moving?
We did look at a number of locations, so it wasn't, you know, we didn't determine that we would rebuild in the same location. In fact, we really couldn't build in the same location. The museum where it stood could never be a museum again. We couldn't insure our artifacts. We couldn't insure visiting artifacts from other museums. So we knew we had it to change. We just didn't know what that would be. So we looked at all sorts of areas in this Czech Village, New Bohemia neighborhood. But as it turned out, the property that was available to us, the property that would fit what we needed to do, was really right across the street. So, and then as I know you know the story of the move, well, we actually lifted up and moved the original building and put it up on higher ground and added on. And so now we have about a 50,000 square foot building compared to about 17,000 at the time of the flood.
Having lost so many of your artifacts and so much of your exhibit, how have you rebuilt that portion of the museum?
Well, the good news is we really didn't lose a lot of artifacts. We did remove some on semi-trailers before the flood hit. We had put some up high. The ones that were damaged, many of them have been restored by now. The library is still in the process of doing that. But the artifacts took a lot of care and tending, but that was not really our big issue in recovery.
In reading about the work that the museum has done since 2008 and of course, since reopening so recently, it strikes me that you have really embraced the historic event that was the flood of 2008 and written that into your history.
Well, it is. It is part of our history. It's part of the history of the city. It's part of the history of the neighborhood. It will never be the same. And so in our interim period, while we were rebuilding the large museum, we actually bought a building on 16th Avenue in the middle of Czech Village. And we used that for administrative offices, and we installed an exhibition about the settlement of Cedar Rapids by the Czechs and Slovaks, but also about the flood, because it is part of the history. And today, this is really the only place you can go or visitors can go to understand what happened. And we think that's really important. It takes a long time to recover. There are a lot of buildings that are yet to be done. There are a lot of empty spaces, empty teeth, as you know, missing teeth development will come and they will rebuild. But it's an important story.
I want to bring John Richarik into the conversation now. He's the owner of Sikora Bakery in Cedar Rapids, and he's also a volunteer at the Czech and Slovak Museum. John, what was your flood experience with your business?
Good morning. Dobre rano. What was our experience? Well, we live in the neighborhood. Excuse me. We live in the neighborhood as well, my wife and I. And so we live about a half a mile from the river, and our home was flooded, as well as the business, as well as the bakery. Our home only received water in the basement. The bakery had 8.5 feet of water in the facility. We were closed for 10 months. We had 332 beautiful volunteers come and help us put the place back together. We've got all their emails. Keep in touch with everybody to let them know how we're doing. And I tell people, if it wouldn't have been for the volunteers, we'd still be scraping and painting 5 years later. So it was really a fantastic thing to have to go through.
Now, if anybody has been to the neighborhood recently, there have been a lot of changes. When you look around you in this neighborhood of Cedar Rapids, what do you see now?
Well, it's a lot of redevelopment, a lot of cranes, a lot of building. So it's all positive. We still mourn the loss of about 1,000 homes from the north and south of us that we lost on the west side. And there's been some infill into the residential area, but it's been mostly commercial development, and it's great. It's good to see the renaissance of the area coming back like that.
Did you ever consider not reopening?
No. But again, unlike a lot of the merchants down there, I bought the bakery to restore it. So leaving wasn't an option. We have a number of heroes in the neighborhood, though. I want to give George Jones some credit. He was the first merchant back in business the day after the flood. He put a card table up with a sign that said open for business, which I thought was pretty cool.
As community members got together and started talking about the future of this neighborhood, how did you see the museum interacting with the rest of the businesses and the residents in the community?
We played off of each other in that we knew we weren't leaving. So that was a positive step. And I think from the standpoint of the volunteers and people that help at the museum, again, you know, I don't want to speak for Gail, but it wasn't an option to leave for most of us. I think there was only maybe 20% of the merchants on the avenue and in the area. And don't fault them at all. I mean, for some people, it just wasn't the right time for them to try to rebuild. And some of them experienced losses much greater than we had, so there wasn't enough to rebuild rebuild on. So, for 80% or more of us, we stuck around, made it work.
How long have you been volunteering at the museum?
20-some years. I started as a volunteer. It helped with the first rebuild project in 1989, 1993. So off and on for over 20 years. Worked for the facility for four years.
What was it about the museum that attracted you?
The heritage, you know.
Is this your family story?
Čisto krevni Česky, full-blooded Czech, yeah. So our family came in 1854, like five generations, you know. And so loved the neighborhood, loved the history. Brought some kolaches for you this morning.
I haven't had any yet.
There you go.
I can't wait for that. In your family, obviously, the heritage of this neighborhood has been very important to you, your mm-hmm. personal history. As, of course, time goes on and different people move into the community, do you feel that some of that history has been lost?
It runs in cycles, runs in waves. You know, there was a Czech Fine Arts Foundation back in the 1930s. You know, that people don't even know about and talk about. And then later on in the 70s, there was a resurgence. You know, where and the people, local folks, credit Alex Haley with Roots. You know, and bringing the resurgence of the genealogy and that. And so it runs in cycles. I think I don't want to say we're peaking, but we're at a high thanks to Gail and in the museum. So we're in the upper mode right now. So I think there is a resurgence in the heritage.
We're going to take a short break and we'll get back to this conversation in a moment. The National Czech and Slovak Museum is one of the recipients this year of the National Medal for Museum and Library Service. Another Iowa institution, the Marshalltown Public Library, also received that prestigious honor. We'll talk with representatives from the Marshalltown Public Library in a little while, but right now we'll continue our conversation on the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library in Cedar Rapids with Gail Naughton, director of the museum, and John Richarik, owner of Sikora Bakery. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Every year, the Institute of Museum and Library Services awards 10 national medals for museum and library service. This is a very prestigious award, and this year, two organizations in Iowa received this award. And in a moment, we'll talk about the work that the Marshalltown Public Library has been doing. But we're focusing right now on the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library in Cedar Rapids, which, of course, was devastated by the flood of 2008. Gail Naughton is here with me. She is director of the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library, and John Richarik, owner of Sikora Bakery and also a Czech museum volunteer in Cedar Rapids. And Gail, in the wake of the flood and all of the work to not rebuild from the ground up, but to really renovate, then actually physically move the museum to rebuild that collection and restore that collection, how do you think the museum has changed in that time?
Well, when something like this happens to you, you really have to step back. You have to think about why you exist, who you are, who you serve, who's going to care that you come back. And those are all things that go through your mind. And It took us – we opened the new museum in about 4 years after the flood. And we were busy with, you know, with rebuilding. We never considered not rebuilding. But who we are inside, you know, it's really all about – really, it's what goes on inside the museum building that's really counts. And so we looked – we went through a whole big strategic planning process. We have a new mission and a new vision. We are looking at a different way of using this knowledge that we hold, this history and culture of the Czechs and Slovaks, to comment on what's happening in America today. It's really about being an American, not just about being Czech and Slovak.
Have you found that there are more people in the community that have been turning to you since you reopened?
Well, lots of people turned to us to support us to come back. I like to say that over 70% of the funds that came to us were from Iowa. It is thank you, Iowa. The funds from the state were immense, and we wouldn't be here if it weren't for that support. So I think they did look, you know, when you start losing your cultural icons, you take them for granted in a community, and then you start looking, and we were only one of a number of nonprofits, cultural nonprofits that were damaged. So that's really the heart of a heart and soul of a city. You can rebuild a courthouse, and you can rebuild, firehouses and things like that. All those services are immensely important. But the real reason people live in a city is for that unity, that culture, that, you know, something that makes it unique.
And that's where the definition of a city comes from, too, isn't it?
Well, it is. You gather around the things that you need for life, I guess. And one of them is your arts and culture. And the Czech story has become a very much iconic with the city of Cedar Rapids. So we had immense support. But sometimes you need people to tell you that even, you know, to really realize that. So it's been a really remarkable process.
John, do you see changes in how the museum operates now and what it means to people in your neighborhood?
maybe not so much in how they operate, but I think it has a little bit of a deeper meaning for people now, especially since it's up 11 feet in the air. It kind of looks over us, which is kind of fun, you know. I mean, in the past, it was just on the riverbank, but now it's in the air about 11 feet. Well, that's kind of nice.
How did the experience of the flood change you?
Personally, I was a mess for a long time. I think the neighborhood was as well, but we all came out of it okay. And a lot of hard work. Now, Czechs aren't afraid of hard work, though, so that was probably appropriate that it would happen to us there on the south side there. We came through okay. But one of the things I'd want to mention is that it was a long 3.5-4 years for us in the village waiting for the museum to open. Half of our sales at the bakery are connected with the tourism that the museum brings. So it was a long time coming, and so we all celebrated a great deal when they reopened. We were, you know, personally at the bakery, we were able to hire, you know, a few more people. And while we're not maybe back to where we were before the flood, we're pretty close. And so that means a lot. And so, you know, to the merchants on the avenue, it was very important that the museum, you know, be up and running and running at full capacity. And I should say they did have an entity on the avenue for all of that time, but it was the museum. It was the exhibit that explained the flood to local residents, so it wasn't the larger scale facility that was open.
You are clearly a man who takes a lot of pride in your heritage. Has this experience changed that feeling? Deepened that feeling? Maybe
deepened it. Yeah. Maybe strengthened it a little bit. You know, have a little bit more of a realization of what family members went through 100 years ago when they came here, you know, because you do, in some ways, you start from scratch. And after the flood, some of the things that Gail said really hit home about, you know, your priorities. You know, your first priorities are, okay, there's a lot of mud around here. What do we do, you know? Again, going back to the volunteerism and the fact that we had people helping us, we had total strangers stop in front of the bakery and pull out and help us.
What's your
Very
favorite,
humbling.
What's your favorite thing in the museum to see?
Oh, man. That's a tough one. That's tough. It's probably the same favorite that a lot of people have. And Gail knows that if it's ever not on display, she has problems. And that's the fish scale costume, Victoria.
Tell me about the fish scale costume.
I should have Gail tell you. Okay. Actually, I'll let her explain it. She'll do a better job.
Well, it's a folk costume. And the decoration on it is made out of cut little scales. They use scales of fish and cut decorative shapes out of them and poked holes and sewed those onto the apron and the dress. And those were actually were damaged because they were on display and weren't removed. However, they were restored. And so it's
with new fish scales? Or
No, same old fish scales. Well, what would else would do better in water than fish scales,
waterproof,
after all?
Right.
Yeah. So it's an example of this attention to and belief in the culture. You know, when people came over, they could only bring a few things, and most of them brought their family folk costumes. They were so important to them, and they showed generations of time and just belief in the culture.
The greatest challenge, maybe one of the greatest challenges for many museums, is to get people to come back again and again, because sometimes you go to a museum once and then never think of it again. Now, of course, eating kolaches is a really good reason.
Brings people back.
To come back again and again. But why should people revisit the Czech and Slovak Museum?
There are always things changing there. First of all, we now have three galleries, and we're at the very at this very moment installing our new permanent exhibition, which will open in June. But there are two changing galleries, and so there's always something new. We have activities, events, festivals going on, you know, year round. There are lots of reasons to come back, and even in the permanent exhibit, I think people will find something new every time they come. It's going to be quite a bit larger than the first one was, much more interactive elements to it, and a lot of elements that people, no matter what heritage you are, will find interesting and I think fascinating. I think people will come back for it.
Gail Naughton is here with us. She's the director of the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library in Cedar Rapids. John Richarik, owner of Sikora Bakery in Cedar Rapids, also a Czech museum volunteer. And I want you guys to stay with us, but we're going to turn our conversation now to another community in Iowa that has been transformed. Cedar Rapids was transformed by Mother Nature. Marshalltown has been transformed by new residents over the past couple of decades, really. And the Marshalltown Public Library is also one of the recipients of this prestigious award, the National Medal for Museum and Library Service. Marshalltown is a community that has seen an influx of Hispanic immigrants, and the library has responded by coming up with innovative ways to serve a new population. Sarah Rosenblum is here with me now. She's the director of the Marshalltown Public Library. Hello, Sarah.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you so much for having us on.
Well, thank you for being here today. And you've only been in Marshalltown since 2011. So a lot of these changes happened before you got to Marshalltown. But when you got there, what did you learn about the history of Marshalltown and how it has changed?
Well, I always like to try to learn about a community as much as I can. And so I've just been really intrigued by Marshalltown was founded in the mid-1800s. The library, first library, was organized in the late 1800s. And it's just been a community that has been real warm and welcoming. I think it is a history of immigrants. Scandinavian immigrants really settled the area. And then about 20 years ago, yes, the Latino population started to really grow, and now we're 25%. And now we have a Burmese community coming in, but we also have Sudanese and other East African folks. And I've just been really intrigued by, in the middle of Iowa, as we say, the library nestled in the fields of central Iowa, to find all this diversity.
It has truly become a cosmopolitan community in many ways. And the Marshalltown Public Library has a history of innovation. It was the home to one of the first children's rooms in the nation?
It really was planned with it's one of the earliest libraries that had planned for children's services and a children's room. I discovered this by doing some research. Early libraries did not have children's rooms. They kind of just shoehorned them in. And then when our library was designed and the cornerstone was laid in 1902, it was opened with a children's room. And it wasn't a Carnegie library. Andrew Carnegie, bless his heart, who funded over 1,900 libraries across the country. And so we've had one. I think we can safely say that we've really had a children's room as one of the early adopters of that.
Now, as the Hispanic population in Marshalltown grew, what do you know about the conversations that were taking place at the library about how to serve that community?
Definitely the library has been really out in the forefront of service to our community. Folks, I think it's a natural progression. Immigrants have always been drawn to the public library when they learn about it. And you can look back in all the great cities where public libraries stepped up and helped immigrants with English language classes and learning to adapt and assimilate to their new communities. And it's just been that way. What we usually see is the children bringing in the parents and the grandparents and doing the translating and helping them get cards. And now I'm seeing that definitely with our Burmese community. We have over 1,000 Burmese residents, and the children come in, they adapt very quickly, and then it's the same thing, they're bringing in their family, and we're helping them learn about life in Marshalltown in Iowa and the U.S.
Now, one of the things that the library has been recognized for is the outreach to the Hispanic community, including the Dia de los Niños at the library. Can you tell me about that?
Definitely. Yesterday actually was our 12th Dia de los Niños, Dias de los Libros celebration, and we were the first in the state to have this celebration. Our youth services librarian Joe LaVille has just done an outstanding job of connecting with the Latino community. But really, we plan our Dia celebration for all children in our community to introduce them to Latino culture and just enhance that love of reading. And yesterday, I don't know the numbers. I know last year we had over 500 children, and I think we probably broke that number yesterday. As I was leaving, people were just flooding in for all kinds of events. And one of the great things we love is that every child goes home with a free book, and we're always wanting to get books into the hands of our youth in our community.
At the Marshalltown Public Library, is there a focus on making sure that books are also available in Spanish?
Definitely. We have one of the largest bilingual collections in the state, and we work very hard to get these materials into the hands of people. We really understand how important it is for people to become literate and to understand. And again, many of our immigrants are coming from communities around the world where they don't have the concept of the public library. So this is a new thing for them. And many times they ask us, is free? They don't understand that it's free. And so we have to explain to them sometimes in different ways that we communicate that this is a wonderful service that we offer to them free. And so we're just, we're really happy to be here and serving our community. And I think definitely making our community stronger.
Are there a number of members of the staff at the Marshalltown Public Library who are bilingual?
Actually, we don't have much bilingual staff, and that's something that I'm hoping to change in the future. We have a very small staff. I always say that we have this great building, and we have a very tiny staff. And we're all trying to work hard to improve our language skills and reach out to people. But so it's a little bit of a challenge, but my staff really rises to the occasion. It is a small town library in many ways. I've been totally amazed. Every day I watch my staff interact with people, and they know their names. They know what they like to read. They give them advice. They put books aside for them. And so it's always a pleasure to me to watch our community, both our old-time residents and our newcomers, interact with our staff.
Now, of course, a lot of libraries have a lot of great programs for smaller kids. But the challenge for a lot of libraries is to continue to engage kids as they grow. What has the Marshalltown Public Library done to try to continue to engage the Latino community as they turn into teenagers and may drift away from the library?
Well, definitely. It's always hard. It's easy to grab the little ones for story time and events like magicians and puppet shows. We work with different groups in the community, Latinos al Éxodo. That's a great mentoring group for Latinos. And also one of our programs we're most proud of is the Emerge program, where every sixth grader in Marshalltown comes to the library, not just once in their sixth grade, but every month. And so we grab these kids. We get them like 8 or 10 times a year. They come with their teacher, and we're really able to show them month after month, talk to them about how important the library is and what the library can do for them and how fun the library is. And so many of these kids, and as you know, our school is very heavily Latino, and now we're getting the Burmese kids. And so it's a way for us to connect with these kids. We actually even put it in their record, so when we go to check something out, we know that they're an eMERGE kid. They've gone through the program. So it really helps us reach out to them. And so it's just a wonderful way to connect to them. Yesterday, we had some of the kids volunteering, the older kids who've been through all of our programs at the library. It was great to see them reach out to the little ones. They're so excited. And it's just another way to keep everything going.
Now, of course, as we've talked about, the Hispanic community in Marshalltown is very large. 25% of the population is. As new immigrants come to the community, you mentioned the Burmese, they're not as large a part of the community, but what is the library doing to try to engage them?
Well, they're definitely very visible, and we see them in the library. We work with the Education and Training Center in town that runs kind of programs to help them learn about the community and what sources are, and they bring them to the library. So that's another way. We partner with groups in our community like Immigrant Allies. They had a picnic recently where we, you know, try to get as much, many of our immigrants to attend, and we just talk about all the resources. And we just try to be really visible and opening and open and friendly and welcoming. We smile. You know, a big thing is just smiling at people when they walk in the door and letting them know that we're here for them.
I'm talking with Sarah Rosenblum. She's the director of the Marshalltown Public Library, one of two institutions in Iowa that received the National Medal for Museum and Library Service this year. There are only 10 of those awards given out each year. In just a moment, we're also going to welcome Veronica Guevara into this conversation. She has some firsthand insight into some of these programs at Marshalltown Public Library. She's a first-generation Mexican-American and native of Marshalltown, and right now she is closing in almost on the end of her career at the University of Iowa. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. We also want to know what you love about your local museum or library. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this hour we're talking about two organizations in Iowa that received a very prestigious award, the National Medal for Museum and Library Service. In the beginning of the hour, we were focusing on the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library in Cedar Rapids, and now we're focusing on the work of the Marshalltown Public Library. Sarah Rosenblum is director of the Marshalltown Public Library. She is with us, and now I want to bring Veronica Guevara into the conversation. She is a University of Iowa student focusing in political science with a minor in Latin American studies, and she's also a native of Marshalltown and a first-generation Mexican-American. Veronica, thank you so much for being here today.
I know, thank you for having me.
So when you were a kid, do you remember when you first started going to the Marshalltown Public Library?
I'd have to say it was probably a school visit. I don't think my parents ever took me to the library or ever initiated that. I'd have to say it was about in third grade. I can't remember specifically, but I do remember what really fascinated me about the library was the children's room upstairs on the third floor of the old building. It had kind of a mural of Charlotte's Web and just different characters, and that I just loved seeing that. So,
when you were growing up, was Spanish the language that was spoken in your home?
Yes, it actually still is. My parents understand English, but they shy away from actually speaking it because of their accent. Spanish was definitely the first language.
So did you just start learning English then when you started school?
I did, yes. I have no recollection of actually not being able to interact with other kids because of language, but I do remember learning it, which is kind of a contradiction, but I started taking English classes in first grade, the beginning of first grade, and I just, to me, in my mind, I just went to classes and the next day I was fluent. But of course, that was probably not how it happened.
Probably took just slightly longer than that. But did your background in Spanish as the first language that you spoke and acquiring English a little bit later, did that give you any challenges as far as reading?
It did. My parents never made it past fifth grade in Mexico, and so they aren't very familiar with reading in Spanish or writing. And so my household, we spoke Spanish, but they never really taught me how to read it or formally write it or anything. And then in English, I mean, it was a new language, so I was kind of stuck in the middle. And in second grade, I remember I just detested reading time in school because I could not sound out the words, or I tried to sound them out in English and they would actually be or try to sound them out in Spanish, but it would be in English. And I just hated reading.
And the library kind of helped you turn that around, right?
Definitely. The library has a lot of books that are in English and Spanish. And I'd have to say that was one of the biggest factors in me really helping me develop my English and keep it. And not only that, but also my Spanish. There are a lot of peers that I have even here at Iowa who are Spanish speakers, but they aren't familiar with reading or writing in Spanish. And I'd have to say that the materials that the library had, combined with practice with my parents, really helped my family develop and keep our Spanish, and for me, my English as well.
And you have four sisters, right?
Yes.
Are you the oldest?
I'm second oldest. I have an older sister, 7 years older than me, actually. So it's a pretty big gap. And then my youngest is 9. So
a big gap all the way around. So did you take your younger sisters to the library with you? Did you introduce them to that as well?
Yes. I'd probably have to say they had it a little bit easier, though.
Younger siblings always do.
Being the second oldest, my oldest sister didn't really speak English to me before I started school. And by the time the sister after me, Jackie, she's a freshman in college right now, started, both me and my older sister would speak to her in English. So she had a pretty good grip on it by the time she started. And then the younger two, I'd say, probably are way more fluent in English than they are in Spanish, which I'm trying to encourage them to really keep that Spanish and encouraging them to read the books in English and Spanish. So,
do your parents feel it's important for you to also hold on to your Spanish and your sisters as well?
Definitely. My parents are very, very proud of our culture, and they've always instilled in me, you are American. You were born here, you're American, but you're also Mexican. So you're Mexican-American. And I remember growing up, my dad, one of his pet peeves was meeting people who were Latino and would say that they didn't speak Spanish or would refuse to speak Spanish to him, which I'd probably say has changed a lot in the recent years. So it was instilled in me at a young age.
Did you continue to spend time at the library as you got older?
Yes, I was a frequent visitor, to the point that I had to evolve from the children's and teen section to the nonfiction because I felt like I had literally read everything in the library. It would take me forever to locate a book just because I had read so many, and I was such a fast reader. I remember the Harry Potter books. I would fly through them in 2 days, so
you just devoured everything. Did you get a chance to join in on some of the other programs that weren't necessarily just about reading, but we were talking about the mentorship program and that kind of thing?
Unfortunately, I think that program may have been created after I had already passed that age, so I didn't. But I do remember going to Dia de los Niños as I was younger. It was definitely a lot smaller, and it's gotten a lot bigger as the years have gone by. So I did attend that, but mostly, I think I enjoyed going alone and just kind of spending a lot of time alone with just me and the book. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Did your older sister also go to college?
She actually went into the military, and she left the military and she started college. So she started college a little late, but she was pretty busy.
Yeah, sounds like it. So when you graduate in December, you'll be the first member of your family to graduate from college?
Yes, the first. So excited. I graduate in December, and I debated whether walking or not just because I graduated in December and waiting around until May. But I think it's going to be really important for my younger siblings to really see that. So
yeah. Your parents must be so proud.
Yes.
And you've had a very distinguished career in college, too. You were one of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute's fall interns. You spent last semester in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, I did, which is why I'm graduating in December. I was notified in late July, so it completely changed my plans for the fall. I would be graduating in May, but I felt that it was really important, just given the new environment and the new responsibilities, to not take classes. So I was still a student at Iowa, but I took the semester off. So
you'll graduate with a degree in political science and a minor in Latin American studies. What do you hope to do when you get done?
Well, I would definitely like to go back to D.C. and I just love D.C. I think it's such a vibrant town, and I think there are definitely more things that I can get back from there. And I would just like to spend a little bit more time there and go to law school. But ultimately, I want to come back to Iowa.
Sarah, when you listen to Veronica talk about her experiences at the library, I can imagine that that's any librarian or director of a library's dream come true.
It really is. We're so proud of Veronica. We definitely think of her as one of our own. And I know that our staff worked with her on scholarship advice, helping her find resources. And we just love her. And so she's a real representative of what our youth is doing in Marshalltown. We're working really hard to help them. I feel really strongly that education and libraries are a way to really help people better themselves. I mean, my own family, my mom was a first-generation immigrant, and I know she went to the library as a child in New Hampshire. And so I just think it's really great that we're recognizing that the IMLS and Susan Hildreth is recognizing the importance of our institutions around the country, and this year that we have two winners from Iowa.
And what do you think it means that there are two winners of this from Iowa? And I want to bring Gail Naughton back into the conversation, too, a director of the National Czech and Slovak Museum. But, Sarah, you get to go first. Two winners from Iowa out of 10. That's incredibly significant.
Well, I think we just obviously both had really strong applications. When I didn't know much about the National Czech and Slovak Museum, and when I saw the short video and the flooding, which I was familiar with somewhat, I was really amazed at the way they've come back and recovered from that. I think in our case, we're just showing the rest of the country that here, even in Iowa, we don't have a lot of resources, but we've managed to really have a great little library that serves our community and really is woven into the fabric of our community. And I think it's just great that the IMLS has recognized that. And I know it's very difficult. They get applications from outstanding libraries around the country, and I'm sure they were all sitting around the table. But I think there were just some things in our application that probably caught their attention.
And Gail, what do you think that it means that there were two winners from Iowa this year?
Well, I think it says a lot about Iowa. I think it says that about the quality of the institutions, quality of the museums, the quality of the libraries. I think they're very important in the communities that they serve. We can be proud. We can be proud, Iowans, that this has happened.
I want to spend the last few minutes of the program, and Veronica and John, you're welcome to jump in here too, but talking about the changing role of libraries and museums, and Sarah, particularly with libraries, I mean, listening to Veronica, obviously the books are still the most important thing at libraries, but there have been so many changes in technology, and libraries are reaching out to communities in many different ways now with technology, even bringing kids into just to play video games. How do you see the changing mission of the Marshalltown Public Library?
Definitely the library has changed and evolved and just in my career. I think it's just really important that people realize that the library is not just a dusty warehouse where we house books, but we are an open, warm spot where people come in for community. They come in nowadays to create their own content. They do come in to play video games. They come in to surf the internet. They come in. They're still coming in and they're reading. You know, they're still reading East of Eden and they're reading Harry Potter. And, you know, they're reading 50 Shades of Grey. And it's just really great when people feel like they can come in and spend time in the library, which a lot of our regulars do, and we like that. We really enjoy when we walk around and we see people engage in the library in a number of different ways, and that's just going to continue to grow as people, I think, come to the library for a sense of community.
And Gail, as things have changed, I can imagine that a lot of people probably think, if I want to know about Czech and Slovak culture in Iowa, I can sit down at the computer and I can Google it and I can learn what I need to know. I can watch some videos and find out all kinds of interesting things online. Why do people still need to go to museums?
Well, there's nothing like real objects, real things. I think, first of all, that's part of it, because nothing can tell the story more poignantly then, for instance, we have an activity in the new exhibit that's packing your suitcase, and there's this small little suitcase, and there's a whole pile of things. And what are you going to take with you when you leave? You leave behind everyone, you know, you leave behind your family, your community, and you have this little suitcase. What's most important to you? So it makes us think about our own lives. You know, it makes us think about our own freedom, even as Americans, that we sometimes take for granted. So I think there's a deeper interaction with the history and the culture, and you get that full interactive experience.
And Sarah, in addition to keeping up with technology, obviously the Marshalltown Public Library has done a lot to change in responding to how the community has changed over time. There was a time when it was enough for a library to have books and to have, you know, someone there to check them out. But how has the philosophy about being responsive to the community changed, do you think, in the library community?
Oh, definitely. The library community across the country and the world is definitely much more engaged with their community. Libraries are seen as real cornerstones and economic drivers in their community. And in fact, in Marshalltown, our building will turn 5 years old in December. We were the first gold LEED certified new building in the state of Iowa. And we are credited with a real economic revival in our downtown Marshalltown area. So we're very proud of that. But people come to our library. We consider the building itself a piece of art, and we have 10 pieces of public art that were commissioned for the library. My favorite piece is when you walk in the lobby, there's amazing floating chandelier above our head that people told us looks like butterflies and clouds in the sky. And so people, like I said, people come into the library for a number of reasons. But definitely, it's a place where people can turn to for information. I always say that it's an information ocean, and people are being washed, you know, in tsunamis of information. And so the library is more than ever a place where people can turn to help them find quality information.
And Gail, as you have become even more engaged in the community of Cedar Rapids and in your neighborhood with the Czech Village and New Bohemia in Cedar Rapids, has that changed your idea of what a museum means in a community?
I think that the museum, I think, is closer. If it could have been closer, I think it is closer to the community and probably to a broader cross-section. We like to think that there's a message there for everyone. You don't have to be Czech or Slovak. We all share this kind of immigrant heritage. And whether you're, you know, whatever your heritage, these stories are our stories. It's a learning experience. We do a lot with the educational institutions. Museums are part of the educational program in the country.
What does it mean to you to receive this award?
Well, I think it's magnificent. I think it's wonderful to be recognized for something that is, I think, out of the norm. Most museums don't go through this kind of thing. I think this museum, in fact, probably in the scope of it, was probably the largest museum disaster ever. You know, we were shut down, out of business. So to come back and help a community come back is a great thing.
Gail Naughton, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Gail Naughton is the director of the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library in Cedar Rapids. John Richarik, thank you so much for being here today as well.
Thank you.
Owner of the Sikora Bakery in Cedar Rapids and also a volunteer at the Czech Museum. And Sarah Rosenblum of Marshalltown Public Library, what does it mean to you to receive this award?
Well, I'm so proud on behalf of our community. It just really shows that a small community can do great things. And, you know, I always say people have been thanking me, you know, congratulating me. And I'm like, it's really all about the work in our community. And I just showcase the work that we've done and the work that we're doing. And I'm just so glad that we're getting the recognition and letting people know all the wonderful things that are happening in Marshalltown.
Sarah Rosenblum, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sarah Rosenblum is the director of the Marshalltown Public Library. And Veronica Guevara, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And best of luck to you. Veronica Guevara is a University of Iowa student. She's also a first-generation Mexican-American and a native of Marshalltown who spent a lot of time at that library growing up. We've been talking today about the prestigious award that both of these organizations have won, the National Medal for Museum and Library Service. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from Alyssa Weiss in Ames. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about wood-fired baking in Iowa. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.